So the new album, 57th and 9th, I'm starting at the beginning. I'm guessing the address is significant to either where you live, where it was recorded, where you want to play on the first date of the tour of this album, or...
I'll explain it. I live in Manhattan, on the Upper West Side, near Central Park. My studio is in Hell's Kitchen. So to get there, and I'd walk to work every day. I love walking to work. I love walking back home. That's a great privilege to walk to work. I had to cross 57th Street, which is a major thoroughfare that splits Manhattan in half. It's a two-way street. It's quite rare. And at 9th Avenue. And I'd get to that point. You'd have to stop because the traffic will kill you if you don't stop. But I would always use that place to take stock of the work that was in progress, the songs I'd been writing or the songs I was about to write, take stock of my life, you know, look at this wonderful city and feel inspired by it and think, you know, I've got to this point in my life. I have a wonderful job. I have, you know, a fantastic family, and I just felt grateful. So that was the place where I would just kind of just give thanks and then walk on to work. But, you know, New York's an inspiring place. It's a dramatically wonderful place. It's got architectural drama, social drama, noise, clamor. You can't gate yourself from the whole of New York. So it's an inspiring place to make a rock record, and it's definitely a character on this record, that urgency of the city.
Is it right that you effectively started the writing and recording process this from a standing start? You went into the studio with the other guys in the band and said, not much going on here.
I've got nothing, guys. Normally I'm very prepared. You know, I've written songs, I've arranged them, I know what I'm going to do. I said, look, I've got nothing. Let's just play musical ping pong. And I've worked with these guys for 3 decades. So I throw an idea at them, they throw it back, it changes slightly, and it goes round in a circle. And eventually it sort of materializes as something that sounds a bit like a song, and then I shape it into a structure. Then I'll take it home and figure out what it's about. But the real idea was to make the record in as short a time as possible, to make it in, say, 3 months. Normally I have an open-ended schedule. We could take as long as it takes. But to say, look, I want it to be finished by this date, and that will give it an urgency. It'll make decisions you have to make on the spot, and you have to stick by them. And that urgency is a character on the record, as well as New York. So it's got this element that was introduced that was artificial, but it worked.
Was it a bit more fulfilling in that way? Because obviously, this is your 12th solo one, all the stuff with the Police and all the albums you've done where you've probably gone into a room with ideas. To be able to go in and say, right, let's do this together, was it almost a bit more beneficial this time around?
I wouldn't say it was more fulfilling. There's no one way to make a record. There's no one way to write a song. My job is to try and find as many different angles to try and capture the creative essence. You know, it's a very, very ephemeral, mysterious thing. You don't know where it is. So you have to trick it almost. You have to play tricks on yourself. How do you do that? If you're too comfortable, you can't do that. I would go home at night and with the song in my head and sit on my terrace in the freezing cold and not go inside to bed until I finished a lyric. Just a way of writing myself out of a crisis, if you like, freezing cold.
Yeah.
Say, I have to finish the song and I'm not going to go in until I finish it. And that worked. I wrote 4 songs in 1 weekend that way. Mm. So little tricks like that just to get an urgent feel to it.
Because you did it this way, which you'd not really done before, and having done this for decades, did you have more self-doubt or self-doubt in general on this one? You're thinking, wow, is this going to come off? Is this going to work?
I'm not sure self-doubt is the word. You know, you never know whether you finish a song, you never know whether you're going to write another one. You don't know where it's going to come from. As I said, it's a mysterious process. So I'm not, you know, smug thinking, I can write songs forever. I'm not sure I can.
Mm.
I mean, the best moment is finishing a song. That's when all the endorphins kick in. You feel great. And then about 20 minutes later, you go, now what?
Well, of course, I Can't Stop Loving You is the opening track to the album, which sets the tone, which is a real... Well, it's been referred to as guitar-driven, which I think is a polite way of people saying it's a rock track,
yeah,
to be honest.
Well, it is. It is. You know, I would always say that the most important element in music, in any music, is surprise.
Mm.
When I listen to music, I want to be surprised. When I compose music, I want to put a surprise in there pretty early in the composition. And when I choose what music I'm going to, you know, give to the public, I want to surprise them. So for the past 10 years, I've been making what you'd call esoteric records. You know, I made a 16th century lute album. I made a record with an orchestra. I did a Broadway show. I did an album of winter song, folk songs, classical song. And my fans, you know, loyally stayed with my curiosity.
Waverings.
Yeah, my waverings, my meanderings. So I'm thinking, what will surprise them? What about a rock and roll record? And lo and behold, I said, well, didn't expect that. Mm. And so that already is a success for me.
Because it's quite eclectic in the sense that, I mean, Petrolhead's very frenetic as well. But then, you know, the last sort of three or four songs, there's a bit of folk on there. It's quite acoustic. Was that always the plan? Or when you put it together, you're thinking, OK, let's structure this album this way?
No plan. I just, whatever came up, we put on it. I mean, I structured it like an album when I'd written all the songs. I always think of a disc with an A side and a B side.
Yeah.
I'm old fashioned that way. But it's supposed to be an integrated whole. So the main thrust of the record is guitar driven, very direct rock and roll, but there's also quiet moments of reflection. So my entire musical DNA is on this record, from The Police on.
Yeah, I was going to say there's some sort of Police sounds on there. There's songs on there that wouldn't sound out of place off Ten Summers Tales. It really is, you could almost call it the best of Sting, because there's so many reflections of what you've done for the last near 40-odd years.
That's a nice compliment, the best of. Supposed to get better as you get older.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, if like wine.
Yeah. Of course, Down, Down, Down. Obviously, you had to put another Down on there, so we didn't think it was a Status Quo cover version. Couldn't have that. And then there's 50,000.
No, I love Status Quo.
Actually. I do as well, but yeah. I mean, you don't want to disappoint them thinking, oh, Sting's doing a Status Quo cover. No, it's an extra Down on there. So what are the plans for it? Are you going to tour this, or are you straight onto another project? Is there musicals?
I'm going to tour this. You know, touring's my life. People say, how long's the tour? I said, well, it started in 1974. I start touring again in February.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to it with a small band, you know, two guitars, bass and drums.
Still Vinnie Cagliotta with you?
Vinnie.
Yeah.
And we'll go around the United States, first of all, in theatres, small theatres. We'll see how the album's received, to see where we can progress to. But I'm perfectly happy to play in small theatres. We're playing at Hammersmith Odeon here in London in the spring.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to playing this music, because it's very accessible.
You were saying that you don't presume you're going to have another song in you.
No.
And that when you finish one, there may never be another one. Mm. So what keeps you motivated after all this time? The hope that another song will come, or what is it?
You know, the first song on the record, I Can't Stop Thinking About You, isn't a love song. At first listen, it might sound like a love song. It's actually the obsessive search for inspiration. The first line is, a white page looks like a field of snow. That's what a writer faces every day, this white blank page. How do you fill it? What's underneath it? Is there a story there? Is there a road there, a path, a character, a tale you can tell? You don't know, and you have to figure it out. The analogy I use is like you're a hunter in the snow. You don't know if anything's there or not.
Mm.
So that song is really about that obsessive need to be inspired.
The tour you've recently done in the US with Peter Gabriel, could it happen in the UK? It's a dream lineup.
You know, Peter and I had so much fun. It was half the work and twice the fun. And it was a very unique tour, because we started rehearsing, both bands in one room facing each other. And I said to Peter, play a song. So Peter and his band play a song. So me and my band responded. And then Peter responded to that. And it was like a very genial battle of the band. Sometimes we'd go against what we just heard. Sometimes we'd compliment it or do something similar theme. But spontaneously, that was the set we toured. And we didn't leave the stage. So right. I'd play bass on some tracks. Peter would play keyboard on some of mine. We'd swap songs.
Yeah.
So the audience were seeing something quite unique. Two people with kind of similar careers. You know, we'd both been in big bands. We both left big bands and then had similar trajectories as solo artists, both interested in a variety of kinds of music. So we had a lot in common. So the audience was seeing this kind of interplay between two people who clearly liked each other and bands that were really enjoying the healthy competition between them. So it was a unique tour, and I'd love to bring it to Europe. Perhaps not this year, because Peter's doing a new album. I've got to do this one. But next year, maybe, I would do it in a New York minute.
Because you've just, you know, teased it there. You've just teased how good it is.
It's fun. It was a great tour.
Mm.
I mean, a fantastic tour.
So what are your unfulfilled ambitions? Because everyone would just say, oh, Sting, he's done this, he's done that, and there's, you know, all the films, the books, the charity work, all the stuff. What, you know, not so much what keeps you motivated, we've covered that, but, you know, what, you know, do
I
you think...
I don't have an agenda. Why? I don't have a, like, plan for world domination. Success for me in any project is just to carve a little bit more freedom for myself. Say, okay, well, I can explore that area, and I can do it, you know, efficiently and do it well, and then I can explore this area. Just widening the landscape, the creative landscape for me is success. I don't know where it ends up, but I genuinely follow my curiosity, and I'm still very curious about music.
So you're winging it and ad-libbing?
Totally winging it. I'm, you know, a chancer.
Well, the new album, 57th and 9th, I tell you what, 57th and 9th is a much sexier title than if it was where I lived and walked to work. It'd be called like the Hanger Lane Gyratory or something like that. Not quite as exotic as 57th and 9th. It's out on the 11th of November. Look forward to seeing you back in the UK soon. And then again with Peter.
Thank you, Wyatt.